Hare Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hare Gopi Janna Vallabha Girivara Dhari Gopi Janna Vallabha Girivara Dhari Yashoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana Yashoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana Yamuna Tira Banachari Yamuna Tira Banachari Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jai Gopi Janna Vallabha Girivara Dhari Gopi Janna Vallabha Girivara Dhari Yashoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana Yashoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana Yamuna Tira Banachari Yamuna Tira Banachari Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jai Radha Madhava Radha Madhava Radha Madhava Jai Radha Madhava Jaya Prabhupada Jai Prabhupada Jai Prabhupada Jai Prabhupada Jaya Bhakti Vino Thakur Bhakti Vino Thakur Bhakti Vino Thakur Bhakti Vino जय ओम विश्वपाद परमहंस परिव्राज श्री श्रीमद अभय चरणविंद भक्ति विदान्त स्वामी श्री गोपाल की जय। स्कंद पादाचार्य श्री गोपाल की जय। कोटि वैष्णविंद की जय। नामाचार्य श्री हरिदास ठाकुर की जय। प्रेम से कहो श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्री भासरी गौर भक्तविंद की जय। श्री सीधा मर्व गोपीनाथ श्याम कुंद राधा कंद गिरि गोपदान की जय। श्री वृंदावन सिंह मथुर धाम की जय। नवरी माया धाम की जय। श्री जगन्नाथ पुरी धाम की जय। गंग माई जमुन माई की जय। तुलसी देवी भक्ति देवी की जय। सांग वीर भक्त बिंद की जय। हरिनाम संकीर्तन की जय। श्रीमद भागवतम की जय। श्री भक्तिनो ठाकुर अरुभक्ति महोत्सव की जय। निताय गो प्रेमानंद ऑल ग्लोरियस टू द असेंबल डिवोटीज। ग्लोरियस टू द असेंबल डिवोटीज। ऑल ग्लोरियस टू द असेंबल डिवोटीज। ऑल ग्लोरियस टू श्री श्री गुरु गौरंग। ग्लोरियस टू श्री गोपाल। ओम अज्ञानं तन्हन्दस्य अज्ञानं ज्ञानं शलाकया चक्षुर्मिलितं तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्री भासरी गौर भक्तवृंद। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे। हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। नमो भक्ति विनोदाय सच्चिदानंद नमने गौर शक्ति कृपाय रूपानुगवराय ते। सो नो इंस्टेड ऑफ द श्रीमद् भागवतम वी गोइंग टू हियर स्पीक अबाउट द इलस्ट्रियस श्री भक्तिविनोद ठाकुर व्हिच इज द आचार्यस से एनीथिंग दैट इज स्पोकन that is spoken in glorification of the Lord and is not in contradiction with the scripture can also be considered Veda, also considered Bhagavatam. So Śrīla Bhaktivinoda Thakura, our great grandfather, was a Nitya Siddha, came down from the spiritual world, like many others, or few others. But Śrīla Bhaktivinoda Thakura has a very, very special place in our life. We wouldn't be sitting here if it wasn't for Bhaktivinoda Thakura. We probably wouldn't know about Navadvip. If it wasn't for Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Mayapur, that would be because what was known as Navadvip was Mayapur, the birthplace of Mahaprabhu, was commonly believed to be on the other side of the river. So it was Srila Bhaktivinoda's desire to resolve this controversy, where was the actual birthplace of Mahaprabhu. And spread the glories of Mahaprabhu, come and develop the birthplace, the holy dham, pastime places of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he was tireless, just like Srila Prabhupada used to say. Prabhupada said, I don't waste any time. He said, you see, Prabhupada said, you see, I never waste any time. I'm never idle. I'm always engaged in Krishna service, connected with Krishna. Well, actually, you have to be in the material world. Otherwise, if you're not, then you're engaged in Maya. You've got to be engaged in something. So as soon as the service to Krishna stops, then it's service to Maya. There's no other alternative unless you're unconscious, of course. So he was like that. And we can hear that it was also his lifestyle was a little similar to Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura. He was born in the 18th century in Birunagar. His house is still there on the way to Calcutta. If you pass Krishnanagar and you turn left, it's the old trunk road Calcutta Trunk Road. Now they have the National Highway. But if you turn left on that road, you come to, after some time, an hour or so, an hour or more, 2 hours, you come to Birnagar, which where Srila Bhaktivinoda was born. And it's still very much the same as a village there. His house is there with some temples in not very good condition. But and at that time when Srila Bhaktivinoda appeared, it was the East Indian company, steamship company, was it? British company was just growing, and the British were just taking over India. They asked for some land. The East Indian Tea Company, they asked for some, bought some land in India, a few hundred acres. And from that, they began to develop that company, and they became very big and very powerful. They had their own security, which eventually practically became like an army. And it was better than the local army, Indian army, because India was divided into different states, different kingdoms. At that time, the Mughals had taken over India. So, with the help of them, then the British came in. That's how they started, and gradually they began to take over the whole country and made it another colony. So, that was the. It was at that time. Then, you know, he grew up. His period of growing up was just the last. You know, the Delhi, the Sultan of Delhi. It was the last Muslim, I think, to be ousted by the British, and then there was some in the south under King Maharaj Shivaji, who was a very powerful Kachiya. Then that was like the British fought with them because they lost their independence, and it was very sad situation because the British had good weapons and the Kachiyas, they can't refuse a fight generally, so these were Marathi warriors, and they would refuse to submit. So anyway, that was the time that Bhaktivinoda grew up, and Calcutta was the British made Calcutta the headquarters and made it the capital, actually, and they did a. Then the Christians came in, the East Indian Steamship Company. They were ruling at that time. Became Clive of India. He wasn't interested in the missionaries coming, but they were pushing. He was, you know, had his own problems. He didn't want other. But they got their way, and then the missionaries came in and started to preach their. That they had that this the Vedic culture, the Indian religion, that was very primitive, and they began to under. Whereas the Muslims, they would be more gross, more destructive. They would, you know, break the temples. They would convert the Hindus. They would do all kinds of horrible things with the deities, and. Just the opposite of what the Indians did. But the British were more subtle. They had scholars. They gave big money prizes in Oxford and other universities for students to learn Sanskrit. So that, and then they brought them over here. The idea was to learn Sanskrit so they could translate the Vedas and interpret in a different way. So as to undermine the whole Vedic Sanatana Dharma principles, which they did to a great extent. And the Indians became intimidated, and they began to get an inferiority complex as being colonized. And many of them, because there wasn't many British here, Prabhupada said they captured India practically without firing a shot. But they were working on, and they started schools, and they were working on educating the Indian, intelligent Indians, youth of India, according to the systems, according to the British system. And so more or less, there'd be Indians, there'd be different people, but they would have the mentality of the British, because they bring them up and preach that their culture was actually a higher culture. Of course, they didn't affect the Brahmanas one fooled so much, but many were, and many of the intellectuals at that time began to curtail the British, so as to get, because British really did a good job of giving them an inferiority complex. So, so many began to work for the British and had take positions in the society, bigger positions in the society. And famous people, like Rabindranath Tagore, who was a very popular poet, and his brothers. There was at that time Bhaktivinoda Thakur and his brother, Rabindranath Thakur's brother. And so they were writing literatures and poetry, and some sects tried to compromise with Christianity and water down the philosophy, the Bhagavad philosophy, because they couldn't, the foreigners, they couldn't handle the deity, worshipping the deity. Nobody bows down before a statue more. Nobody bows down in the West before anyone, period, right? Even your father, you don't bow down. Is it? Just not in the culture. Even in the... I remember going to a church, I'd been in India for a long time, I went back, then I took my boots off. When I went in the temple, and everyone was looking at me, disgusted, Really disgusted. something you don't, and bowing down was, what are you doing? Nobody does it. So that culture wasn't there. So especially to a deity or an idol, as they say. But we know the deity is not an idol, it's an archer avatar. When Krishna manifests his pastimes, when he comes here, so everyone can see. So there's witnesses to see Krishna's pastimes, to see what he looks like. So there's great descriptions. If he didn't come, then it would be very difficult to believe what the scriptures say, the description. But there's a great description. In those other modern religions, they come from the desert. There's Christianity, Islam. If desert means sinful birth. If you're born in the desert, it means it's not a very pious birth, right? There's no vegetables, there's no water. It's very difficult to live. But there are, these people that are empowered to go and preach there, to those preaching sub-religious principles to that class of people, just to keep them in the human form of life. So this wasn't really part of that. It's the Vedic religious system is very advanced, very scientific, very advanced. So some started a movement that would satisfy the British, and it was like impersonal because they couldn't handle the form of God. Because in those religions, those more modern religions, although they accept God as a person, there's no description of his personality. So therefore they're not allowed to worship a form of God, because nobody knows the form of God, obviously. If there's no description in the scripture. So if there's no description, if you make a form of God, then it's your speculation. So therefore it's outlawed. You mustn't bow down before any image of God, because you don't know what God looks like. But if you know what God looks like, and he tells you, and it's authorized what kind of form to make and how to make that form, the procedure to make the form, then it's different. Then it becomes the Archa Vigraha, or the Archa Avatar. It's not different. Like the Lord is absolute. Prakat Leela is not going on, when the Lord is not performing his pastimes, then the deity stays here. So that's a reality, because that is formed in the under the Lord's instructions. The deity form is it's not just it's a representation of the Lord's form, but it's spirit in matter. The Lord can act. One has to accept the achinta shakti of the Lord. You have to accept that his potencies are inconceivable if you want to understand God at all, whatever you can understand. You have to accept that inconceivable principle. Otherwise, by logic, you cannot understand. It's beyond logic, it's beyond the mind, beyond intelligence, beyond reason. Although that's all we have to work with. We use those things, but they'll actually fall short. You can't. God is transcendental. He's transcendental to this. The mind, the senses, the intelligence, the intellect, they're all material. We don't have the ability to actually approach that realm. So then, if that realm approaches us, then we can understand. If the Lord reveals himself to us, then we can understand. But by the a mechanical approach, ascending approach, using this or whatever faculty we have, we can't do it. So then there's a scientific process. Bhakti Mama Bhajanati, you perform your devotional service. If you can't do that, you do some meditation. If you can't do that, you practice yoga. If you can't do that, do karma. If you can't do that, give some charity, something which gradually the point of understanding the Lord as a person and your relationship with him. That's a Sanatana Dharma. So that was above their heads. I mean, a few Europeans and others accepted, became Hindus, but generally looked down on. So these, says the one society, they were called the Brahmos. It was a kidgery. It was a concoction between Christianity and Mayavad, because Mayavad, there's no form of God. So it was a kind of compromise that they could, still be accepted by the Hindus, accepted by the British, and, Bhaktivinoda Thakur gave debates to defeat that, to straighten everyone out, put everything right. He's very smart. In his earlier years, He appeared to be, like many acharyas, it's like Prabhupada. He appeared to be an ordinary man. I mean, born in a family of devotees, but he's doing his business, and he was in the nationalistic movement. Then he met his spiritual master, and then he became a pure voice. But on a similar side, he was married at 12. His wife was 5 years old. And they were very wealthy. His father was fabulously wealthy, and his mother also very aristocratic, wealthy. But he led a very checkered life. The fortunes went. He suffered a lot of misfortune. A lot. I mean, his family members dying all the time, and sickness. He was getting sick. He'd been sick. The fortune ran out. One time he was just had nothing, practically nothing. But he was very intelligent and scholarly, and he wasn't very naughty. He would, while his brothers and that, they would be naughty, playing stuff. He would speak to the guards, the chokidars, and he would hear the Ramayana, and he would ask them questions. And as a boy, young boy, he was interested in the spiritual aspect. He went to a school the system in that school, which would raise some eyebrows now. the main teacher was quite harsh. I didn't like him. He was very, very, very strict. But he had a program. It was a hierarchy of boys. Some other schools do that also, and some private schools do that in the West. They allocate the responsibility to the older boys, and they keep the younger ones in order. So everyone is above someone else, you know, the first year, second year, third year, etc., etc. And they get different privileges as they rise up. So one of the things then the first boy who came to class school in the morning, he would get one whack, one slap. Second boy would get two slaps. Third boy would get three slaps. Yeah. There wasn't many, you know, you didn't want to be late, otherwise that was a system. And these other, the elder boys, they really used to bully the younger boys. As it's nature, human nature is like that. If you give someone charge of somebody else, complete charge of somebody else, it brings out a funny nature, and that's a psychology. Brings out a funny nature in people that they want to exhibit that controller and it got so bad that this teacher was encouraging it, and they'd have to bring him something also from home, some dal or some rice or some fruit. And one day Bhaktivinoda took a jackfruit for him. So then his mother said, "Where's that jackfruit?" So he told him, and she went to complain to the school. So the teacher said, "No, don't bring big things, only small things." But it got so bad and he got so harassed that Bhaktivinoda's elder brother, he took a machete, you know, the knives they cut the grass. And he went to the teacher's room at night. he was going to chop him. And then all the boys grabbed him. And the teacher left that day. He never came back to the school. A little relief. So, warning for the teachers: be loving to your students. So he got he studied a lot, and he studied all the Western philosophies also, and the Western religions. So he had a good understanding of everything. And he was taught English because he came from an aristocratic family, and everyone wanted to be like that. He got some jobs as teaching, not very much money. He was always moving here and there. He got job in government posts. The British liked him because he was very a trustworthy person. He's a very moral person. Plus, he was very learned and very religious. So any any religious conflicts, then they couldn't really handle. They would call Bhaktivinoda Thakur, so he would sort those things out. So much so that eventually he got the position of the chief something in Puri, commissioner in Puri for the Puri temple. And so he moved about a lot, and all these later on, then all of the British, they generally liked him, so they were just trying to get him to their zone, to their district, their state. But he moved around quite a lot. First of all, when he was trying to make money, and then he got the position of a magistrate. And this is a book by Rupa Vilas Prabhu, Seventh Goswami. It has his life story in there. And when he was in Puri, then he noticed that there was the king was embezzling a lot of money, a lot of funds from the temple. And Bhaktivinoda discovered that. So he, by that time he was a magistrate, a judge, magistrate, and he had full power over the Jagannath temple. And he was very famous there, and he's very popular. But when he found out that the king was embezzling money from the temple, then the king became very afraid. He couldn't kill him because Bhaktivinoda was too big, too popular at that time. So what he did, he had a secret yajna in the temple, like 20 brahmanas inside the Jagannath temple in a secret place. They did this homa, fire sacrifice, to kill Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So for one month this went on. Then at the end of the month, the last ablations is into the fire, which was supposed to kill Bhaktivinoda Thakur. The king's son died that time. That was the same time. Then king realized his mistake, because Bhaktivinoda made him, as a fine for embezzling Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he made him offer chapan bhog to Jagannath every day. Anyway, yes, because he had to make chapan bhog every day. It's a huge thing, so the king became, his treasury became depleted. He had to do it for a year or something like that. So this way he was very upset with Bhaktivinoda and tried to kill him. But after that, then he realized Bhaktivinoda Thakur was not an ordinary person. He's protected by Lord Jagannath. And Bhaktivinoda was writing a lot that time. He didn't come into contact with pure Vaishnavas at that time, because for a couple of generations before him, the pure teachings of Lord Chaitanya were covered. After Narottam Das and Srinivas and etc., they caused a big boom. They spread it like anything. But after that, it went down, and then these Sahaja groups came up, and so then the Vaishnavism from the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, they got a very bad name, because they would engage in and not very pure acts, some of these sampradayas. 13 sampradayas, Bhaktivinoda Thakur lists them. And Vaishnavism had a bad name at that time. So no one was interested in Gaudiya Vaishnavism, that is. No one was really interested. So there was that on one side, then the British on the other side to try and put everything down. So this is a period that, you know, Bhaktivinoda had. But when he heard about that, he never had a Chaitanya Charitamrita. I think it took him 7 years before he could got a copy of Chaitanya Charitamrita. And he said after reading it, then he could appreciate Mahaprabhu as these teachings are first best he's ever heard. So on his second reading, then he realized Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna. So on the third reading, he became a complete follower of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he wrote many, but he wrote over 100 books. He wanted a guru, and he prayed to the Lord, and then he was initiated by Bipin Bihari, who came in the line of Nityananda Vamsi, Janave Ma. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, there was some little controversy. Whether it's true or not, we don't know, but there was a little controversy about Bipin Bihari's lineage and some philosophical differences, but we don't know if it's true or not. Bhaktivinoda Thakur eulogizes him, of course, he's his guru. But we see after, when we worship, and on the altars we put the Gaurakishore Bhaktivinoda and Jagannath Das Babaji. Jagannath Das Babaji was a very great Vaishnava, Siddha, perfect soul. He was very famous in Vrindavan. He used to spend 6 months in Vrindavan, 6 months in Navadvip. And then Bhaktivinoda Thakur got his association in Vrindavan, and he came. When he was here, then he used to take his association. He was considered his Shiksha Guru, and also he gave him so he was considered the Shiksha Guru. So that's why we worship Jagannath rather than his Bhaktivinoda Diksha Guru. So then he got, you know, when he became magistrate, he became quite wealthy. He had a house and he had a place in Puri, this Bhakti Kutir, near the Samadhi of Haridas Thakur. ISKCON has taken that place now. It's supposed to develop it into a museum and a thing. So another while he was in, another important thing was that he was anxious to come to, he's anxious to retire because his health was always, he's always getting sick. And so he asked, the government refused to let him retire. They always rejected his resignation. He was a very valuable person. You know, when there was that conflict with the Bhikshina, that Gupta Big Yogi, who was said he was an incarnation of Vishnu, and his mission was to drive all the British out, kill all the British in India and drive them away, and he had some following in some lot of cities. Yeah. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur was called to assess him, and when Bhaktivinoda confronted him, and he knew Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he knew his name, he knew why he had come here, he knew how many men were with him, and he was showing all these mystic powers. He was healing people, and he had a big following like that. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur wasn't fooled, because he was claiming to be Vishnu. And also having Rasleela with respectable men's wives. He would advertise he's going to have a Ras Leela, maybe the last chance. Anyone? So then these naive people would send their wives to have the Ras with the incarnation of Vishnu. And also his anti-government policies, and Bhaktivinoda went to arrest him. But he was fearless. Bhaktivinoda was fearless. This Gyogi was fearless. He started to shake his hair when the police came, and sparks were shooting out of his hair, and all the police ran away. But eventually they took him, and he said, the yogi said, "Look, I'm coming with you because you're my great devotee, and I'm always submissive to the desires of my devotee. You know, your devotee to Brahman. Whatever you say should come true. So to honor that, I will come with you. Although I'm actually God, I don't have to." So he did that. He did a few things like that. He got these people straightened out. So they would call him when there was a different incarnations came up. So the Bhaktivinoda Thakur was very, very famous. So they didn't want it. They didn't want to lose him. So he found the he wanted to, he said, if you can't retire, then let me transfer me to Krishnanagar or Navadvip. So he just got another post. They said it's difficult for us. So then he personally came to Krishnanagar and he spoke to the district magistrate here, or a magistrate there, and he asked if he would swap positions, posts. So he agreed. So he got to be based in Krishnanagar, so he's in ecstasy. So then he could come to Mayapur quickly, and he was trying to find out the actual birthplace of Mahaprabhu, and he had access to a lot of maps. The British made a British Geological Survey. They had made some very good maps of India, whole thing, because they was looking for, you know, minerals and whatever. But they were very, very precise maps they made. You can see some of those maps of, they even, you know, put in the trees in. So that's what big trees that was. So with the help of those maps and different scriptures like Bhakti Ratnagara, etc., which explain how Lord Chaitanya, when he took sannyas, he left his house, he crossed the Ganges to go to Katwa. So Katwa is on the west bank. So that means he crossed the river. That means his house was on the east bank. But they were claiming that the actual birthplace of Mahaprabhu was on the west bank, and it was a very big fight for that, because there were a lot of pilgrims were going there. They were collecting a lot of the money. The people were managing that place. But eventually, with the help of the maps and local people, then he had the vision. He was praying to Lord Gauranga. And then he had that vision of this mansion from Navadvip, the Rani Dharamshala. He was there, and his son was there, and his secretary was there. But it was a cloudy day, cloudy night, and suddenly he saw this, he had the vision of this a golden mansion, he describes it. And he asked, can you see? And the son said he could see it, but the secretary couldn't see it. And so he noticed there was a big tall tree there. So next weekend when he came from, then they went there to that tall tree, and that was Baladigi here, by the side of the Mahaprabhu's birthplace. And he spoke to the older people there, and they can remember that place was called Mayapur. Then because the floods came out, then everyone moved. So this was the actual original Mayapur birthplace, was the actual original Navadvip when the floods, Ganges flooded 100 years. They moved to the higher land over there that same. So then he was shown, and they actually directed him to the birthplace of Mahaprabhu, which is a mound covered with tulsi. And nobody would farm that land, because when they tried to cut the tree or cut the land, there would be screams. So it was a very sacred place. There was only tulsi growing there. It was owned by some Mohammedans. I think they got David to Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So then he established, and then could firm it, then he bought the Jagannath Das Babaji. The Jagannath Das Babaji was 120 years old at that time, and they used to carry him on a basket. He had a very strong servant who used to put him in a basket and carry him on his head. when he arrived here, he became very ecstatic and he began to leap, jump in the air. This is it, this is it. This is the birthplace of Nimai. So we owe that great thing to Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So he was a right, and then he established a house in Sarup Ganj. Sarabhi Kunj there. He wrote many books with a lot of preaching. Namhat, he opened about 500 Namhat centers. They used to go around preaching a lot. And he said that time was very ecstatic. Many people would be coming by him and some of his associates who were pure devotees. They said a lot of preaching programs, a lot of people became Vaishnavas. Then, after he retired, then he was going to accept the Babaji Vesh. And he wanted to take from Gaurakishore's Babaji Maharaj, who was practically the second most prominent Vaishnava, Avadhut. And because Bhaktivinoda told his son, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he should take initiation from Gaurakishore. But Gaurakishore didn't want to initiate him. Gaurakishore was actually illiterate, although he could quote many scriptures. Bhaktisiddhanta was from a very sophisticated family, a very scholar, naistika brahmachari, and there's a big story how he refused, but eventually he initiated Bhaktisiddhanta. So similar story. Although he respected Bhaktivinoda Thakur as his guru, Bhaktivinoda Thakur recognized him as a Paramahansa. So he wanted to take his initiation and from Babaji. And so Bhaktivinoda, when he was asking him one day, he came over, because he used to come there. He has his bhajan kuti there at Bhaktivinoda Thakur's house. When Gaurakishore left and Bhaktivinoda Thakur was singing down to the ghat, the road, and he was asking him, please give me the initiation, give me this Babaji verse, can finish with his material life. But Gaurakishore wasn't very keen to do it, his humble self. So after some days, Bhaktivinoda Thakur went across to Navadvip to see him, and Gaurakishore could understand he's coming. So then he hid. Gaurakishore went and sat on the veranda of a prostitute's house, sat there and chanted whole morning. And then he came back, and in the afternoon he was at his ashram, he's laughing and laughing out loud. So his disciple asked, why are you laughing? He said, I've cheated him. I've outwitted that Thakur Bhaktivinoda. He came to look for me, and I knew if I go to this prostitute, he would never ever dream of coming to look for me there. He said, I've cheated him. But eventually he gave him the initiation Babaji Vesh. Then he gave him the cloth of yeah, he gave him this cloth of Jagannath Das Babaji. Gaurakishore had one of his cloths, so he gave that to Bhaktivinoda Thakur. His daily activities are very wonderful. Srila Prabhupada, his son, he has a son, Lalit Prasad. He's left his body now, but he was alive during the our time. His daily schedule. This is while he was living in Puri. He was never idle, being always engaged. Between 7:30 and 8 p.m., he would go to take rest. And then he would rise at 10 o'clock. Prabhupada used to do the same thing, so he could translate his book. He would light his oil lamp and write books until 4 o'clock in the morning. Over 100 books. Then he would rest for half an hour. Then he would wash his hands and face at 4:30 and sit down and do japa for two and a half hours. But he never showed his beads to anyone. So he always kept them in his bag. And he was always chanting as the time permitted. Then at 7 o'clock, he answered correspondence. He was a magistrate. Just like Prabhupada used to do, he would go for his morning walk. Prabhupada would translate all night, chant japa in the morning, go for morning walk, come back for darshan, give class. Then he would go up, take the light breakfast, and massage. I don't know if he light breakfast before. Then during the massage, he would dictate letters, answer letters for his disciples. So similar schedule they had. That was for half an hour. Then at 7:30, he would read different religious and philosophical works for 1 hour. Then he would receive visitors. At that time, or if there's no visitors, he would continue to read till 9:30. And then he would walk backwards and forward on the veranda of his house, contemplating different religious questions and solving them in his mind. And sometimes he would solve them out, he would talk out loud, sometimes if he was preaching to somebody and debating with somebody, as if preaching to some unseen guest. Then he would rest for 15 minutes, 9:45. Then he would take his bath and his breakfast, which was half a liter of milk, 2 chapatis and some fruit. And then he would put on his uniform and get in his horse carriage and go to office, Krishnanagar. And he always wore 6 strands of tulsi beads. So when he was as a magistrate, he said he would decide a case immediately. He would hear the case, make decision almost immediately, not tolerating any humbug. He did his business and left. And he shaved his head every month and never cared what anyone thought about it. And the lawyers there, and the other Britishers, they were astonished by his capacity. Because he, at 10 o'clock he would start, and he would hear between 30 and 50 cases by 1 o'clock. Amazing. Be like that now in India. What took other magistrates half an hour, he finished in 5 minutes. He took another 2 minutes to write a judgment in detail. Some of his British superiors became envious and tried to discourage him, but he was not affected. In other words, they thought he must be taking bribes, because he's so quick. That means that people are coming and giving him bribe. So then they kept watch on his house at night. So they saw, he goes, he's taking rest, turn the lights off at 10 o'clock. Then there's watching, then the lights come on at midnight. Ah, it's in the kind. He gets up and he's doing his writing and translate. And they saw him as actually a very saintly person, so they began to respect him. One of them, he became a lord. What was his name? A duke or something. So when he came to Calcutta to work, he stationed, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur's son was working in Writer's Building at that time in Calcutta, so he told him this duke is in Calcutta now. So Bhaktivinoda said, oh, I want to see him because I used to work with him, he's a magistrate. So when Bhaktivinoda Thakur went to see him, then he was waiting outside the building with folded hands. He led Bhaktivinoda Thakur in and praised him. And he said I was afraid of you when you was a magistrate. He said you were so good and so popular. I thought that if there could come more Indians like this, the British are gonna lose their position. These are really smart, intelligent, and capable people. That I thought the British would lose their power position. So I tried to get you out of your job, that service. He said, but I couldn't do it. But now, in my old age, I'm very sorry I did that, and I recognize you're a very great person. Please forgive me. So, but I don't know if they all forgave him. So then he would go to the office, as magistrate, and at 1 o'clock. Then he. 1 o'clock, he would finish. And that duke, he used to read Bhaktivinoda's summary of the court cases, and he was amazed at the Bhaktivinoda's intelligence and wisdom in deciding the cases. Very quickly he would decide. Very quickly. One time, one of the people were pleading with him for mercy. He said, okay, you don't have to go to prison, but you have to chant 64 rounds a day for 1 month, or something like that, of 3 months. But he couldn't do that, so he said, keep him under house arrest. So then at 1 o'clock he went back home and refreshed himself. And then he returned to work from 2 to 5. I don't know who did that. If he left at 1 and got back at 2 in a horse carriage. Anyway, he came home, had a break, went back from then till 5 o'clock in 5 p.m. Yeah, then they would take his bath. When he come home, evening meal, rice, little rice, sabji, 2 chapatis, another 1/2 liter of milk. he had a pocket watch. He would work with that, so he's very, very punctual. Everything, he would check his watch. Very regulated person. The character finished there. Someone writing about a biography of Bhaktivinoda Thakur was, he was so charitably disposed, no one ever went away from his home disheartened. And he who once called on him was sure to meet him again with a smiling face. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur befriended men regardless of their rank. A phenomenon especially visible when he widely preached the holy name. He never bore any grudges to those who were jealous of him or attempted to impede him in his spiritual mission. And in the long run they were ashamed of their conduct and became begging for his mercy, which he never refused. His sense of universal brotherhood made him the friend of all. He was always eager for the benefit of all. Whoever contacted him was immeasurably benefited. He was never proud. He never said a word that would injure another's feeling. He never spoke anything to make anyone feel bad. And he never chastised anyone unless he was perfectly confident that he had the right to do so for that person's benefit. On the other hand, whoever received a warning from him felt purified by the experience. He did not possess the least shadow of vanity, although he was honored and respected throughout Bengal, Bihar and Orissa. You know, he had this, when his house there, he had this a train was coming, it stops outside his house, right? This narrow gauge from Krishnanagar. So by his influence he got that train there. One day he got in a train, it was full up, and Bhaktivinoda sat on the floor. It was a district magistrate. So someone said, he said to someone, you should give him your seat. He said, why? He said, because he's a district magistrate. But he was, although he's a district magistrate, he's the most powerful person in the district. In Nadia, you have one district magistrate. He was sitting on the floor, very humble. As a government official, he was always taken into confidence by the British officials, and consequently he was well acquainted with the reasoning behind government decisions. He had witnessed the hard days of the Great Mutiny. They mutinied all the... because the soldiers, there was a rumor spread that these rifles they had, there was a special rifle, Royal Enfield rifle, and the cartridges you had to bite the end off for some reason, bite something off the back, and then put them... And then there was a rumor that there was beef fat on it, cow fat on it, or pork on it. So Muslims and the Hindus, they were outraged, they couldn't do it. But the British were insistent, you know, you have to do it. Then there was a riot, and then I think it started somewhere in Lucknow. They all mutinied, and there was a big mutiny all over the place, because there wasn't many British, it was all... And there was a lot of sepoy mutiny. Eventually it got quelled, they called in a lot of troops. The government of Bengal also, more than one occasion, wanted to vest him with honors and titles, but he humbly declined that. On each time, on the grounds that such honors would, instead of doing him good, stand against his holy mission. So he wouldn't accept any titles or initials like that. He, of course, a lot of suspicion, as he was a government officer, but he refused to accept any present from any person. He was completely above corruption. He never supported the least shadow of immorality, and he never crossed the threshold of any place which he knew to be immoral. He didn't even go to the theatres where the women were dancing. He was a complete abstainer, perfect teetotaler. Teetotal, it means he never drank, he never ate betel nut or chewed tobacco. So he kept himself very, very, very proper, very religious person. At the same time, very transcendental. So this is, you see, how the acharyas behave. The ideal in every way, always
above suspicion,
because people will. Acharya means one who sets the example, who preaches by example. So they have to be completely above board. If there's one little thing wrong, people are watching, because there's always envious people. They're watching, and one little thing they see. Like Srila Prabhupada says, if you hold up a white sheet and there's one black spot, everyone will look at the black spot. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur was a very ideal, exemplary acharya, very transcendental. We have to thank him for what we have for our involvement in Krishna consciousness today. He revealed his spiritual identity, which is another rare thing which the siddhas don't usually do, but he revealed his identity as a manjari in Krishna Lila, and how he attained that. So many, many books on the progress of pure bhakti from the beginning to the end, from Shraddha to Prema. He wrote many, many, many books and teachings and many books to straighten people out, to expose deviant philosophies. And so it was him that gave the Gaudiya Vaishnavas respectability at a time when it was a really bad time. So everything was against him, but single-handedly practically. Because the pure devotees, they were just in solitude doing their bhajans. But he actually, you know, went out to the world. And he had ideas. He was also sending his literature abroad, and he had ideas, and because he was convinced even to the British he was preaching. They were saying, this Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he speaks with such authority. He's saying what he's saying is a universal religion, which will gradually spread all over the world. And all those this chanting the holy names of God will be the prominent religion all over the world, and all those different religions, they will all join that. He said this is his prediction. So that's his prediction. Predictions come true. Like 100 years ago, he said, when will the day when the foreigners will come to Navadvip, this place, Mayapur, they will raise their hands and chant Hari Bol. The Russians and the Prussians and the French, the Americans and the Germans, they would come here with their Bengali brothers, they would chant their names. This was completely ridiculous at that time. I mean, Gaudiya Vaishnavas had a bad name. And he's talking about, you know, in the future, all the foreigners are going to come and chant Hari Bol. But it happened. So this is what he's saying. This will, all the other major religions, and they will all come under the banner of the holy name. Whether they chant Hare Krishna, I guess they will. But they'll chant, at least they'll start chanting their own names of God. So this is Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So today is his appearance day. We can remember him. We don't have fasting this morning, so we can remember him during our breakfast time, spare time, remember his qualities, activities, and be grateful for what he's given us. He's given us Mayapur and his son and Prabhupada. Is Sachinam Bhaktivinoda Swami Thakur ki? Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Jai Gopi Premanandi. Hare Krishna.